Welcome to The Lobbying Show, the show about the people in government relations, how they got into it, and what their jobs entail, what works and what doesn't. I am the host, Jim O'Brien. Today on the show, we speak with Jen Stowe of the Carpet and Rug Institute, known as CRI. That is the association that represents the carpet and rug manufacturers before all federal, state, and local governments. Jen spent her first year after college in Mexico, working at an orphanage. She eventually ended up as the VP of Government Relations of CRI and has been there for 10 years. She is fluent in Spanish, which was helpful. We did the interview at a Spanish restaurant in Boston at the summer meeting for NCSL. She did all the ordering. She is a fantastic person, which is obviously a view held by a lot of people, because it seemed like everyone in Boston greeted her like a long-lost friend. She also has a very unique wedding story to tell. I hope you enjoy the interview. So I am sitting here with Jennifer Stowe from the Carpet and Rug Institute, and we are in Boston for NCSL. We just had the best Mexican lunch I think I've had in years. You would agree.
It was delicious.
It was delicious.
The best mole outside of Mexico.
I don't even know what a mole is, but I ate it, and I loved it.
It's a chocolate sauce. It's made with chocolate.
So already I'm having sweets, and
already,
I said I wasn't
But it's not
it.
Sweet. It's a savory chocolate sauce.
It was very, very good. So Jen, I was laughing because we were walking over here. We couldn't go about 5 feet without you stopping and saying hello to someone. And as we were talking about earlier, it really drives it home that it really is kind of a small community, or you all know each other. I mean, we literally stopped 10 times walking out of the convention center where you were saying hello to whether it was Ron Barnes or whoever else we bumped into. So I think I want to first start with the reason you're most famous, which is your wedding.
Which
was on the Today Show. There are not many people, maybe no one, who can make that claim. So why don't you tell people how you ended up getting married on the Today Show?
Okay, well, my husband Lane and I met on the plaza of Rockefeller Plaza outside of the window. We were watching a taping of Kathy Lee and Hoda. They were interviewing Kelsey Grammer. And my husband was standing about 10 feet from me, and my now husband, he wasn't my husband at the time, said, "Oh, it's been my lifelong dream to see Kathy Lee Gifford." And I said, "Oh, I'm so glad I'm here while you're realizing your lifelong dream." So we started talking, and he had lived in the town where I had gone to high school. He's a little bit younger than me. He lived there after I was already gone.
Okay.
His boss at Prudential, where he had worked at the time, had been a friend that I had sung with in high school. He dated the girl that was our mascot in high school. And so we kind of started talking small world.
Yep.
And one thing led to another. He asked me for my number. We friended each other on Facebook. And I gave him my number. And that afternoon, as we were both traveling back to our respective homes, his in Pennsylvania, mine in Virginia, we texted for about an hour. And then he said, "May I call you tonight?" We talked for about 3 hours on the phone that night, and we had our first date in Baltimore a week later, and then I had the opportunity. I had called into Hoda has a radio show on XM Radio.
Okay.
And she had posed a question to the audience about some sort of what kind of special skill do you wish you had or something, and I thought, oh, I'm going to try and call in. You know, if it's like when I was in high school, it'll ring 20 times and then go busy and you'll never get through. It rang twice, and the woman answered the phone, and she said, "Thanks for calling the Hoda Show. What's your name?" I said, "Jen." And she said, "Hold on, Jen. You'll be on with Hoda next." And I was like, "Okay." So I get on with Hoda, and I said, "Before I answer the question, I just have to tell you, if it hadn't been for you and Kathy Lee, I would have never met my fiance, because by then we were engaged."
Yep.
And she wanted to hear the story, so I told her the story, and she said, "Oh my gosh, hold on, we have to do something with that." She put me on with her producer so they could get all my contact information, and they had us on the show in December of 2015, where they told our story of how we met. They were able to find the footage of us on the plaza.
I remember seeing it. Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And at that time, they were sweet. They had a birthday cake for me. I had just turned 50. And then at the end of the show, Kathy Lee said, we'd like to host your wedding whenever you decide to do it, because we hadn't set a date or anything. I don't think she was actually supposed to do that. I think she just extended the offer, and then they were kind of like, oh, okay, well, we'll host the wedding. So we ended up getting married last May 12th.
On the actual Today Show.
Kathy Lee and Hoda, the fourth hour of the Today Show.
Now, was that something you sent to me, or did I see it on Google? Because I remember...
I think it's on YouTube.
YouTube.
And it's still on the Today Show's website, and it's probably on my Facebook page.
So people can view it?
People can find
Facebook
it, yes.
Page
I'm sure that
YouTube.
There's a link there somewhere.
It is. And so here at MCSL, you spend your summer going to many different conferences.
It's all about relationship building.
It's all about relationship building. And so is MCSL one of the bigger conferences, if not the biggest?
It is the biggest. In fact, if you're not sure what you're doing when you come here and you don't know what you want to accomplish, who you want to meet, what programs you want to attend, it can be overwhelming. I remember the first year I came, and that was probably almost 15 years ago. I walked in, I don't even remember where the meeting was, but there are thousands of people.
Yes.
And in fact, I think this is the second highest attendance they've had. The first time they were in Boston, they had almost 9,000 attendees.
Wow.
Public sector, private sector, unions, everybody.
Yep.
But it's a big group, and the program is huge. So unless you know how you want to navigate that, it can be overwhelming. And one of the things that I use to navigate it is I'm a member of the State Government Affairs Council.
Mm-hmm.
SGAC is the association that represents multi-state lobbyists.
Yep.
And so it's a professional development group. Lots of good educational programs, but also social events that are in conjunction, and they partner with NCSL.
Okay.
So they honor the leadership of NCSL. Last night there was a reception to honor the outgoing president and the outgoing staff chair of NCSL. And then tonight there'll be a late night event. On Sunday they had a part of their education program. They have a certificate program, a professional certificate and an advanced certificate. They had a class associated with the advanced certificate program. And so being part of SGAC really helps navigate, because it's a smaller organization that partners with NCSL and kind of aids in making connections between some of the legislators and meeting your peers and not being quite as overwhelmed.
Right. And so when you say navigate, and people may be hearing planes in the background, we're obviously very close to Logan Airport. When you say navigate, you're thinking about the states that are important to you, issues that are important to you, which panels should you go to. And so they help you kind of figure out the best way to approach that.
In fact, you're familiar with the Product Management Alliance.
Yes.
The Product Management Alliance came to
be... We just bumped into
Kevin Kanan,
right.
Who was the executive director. He was the second stop on the way. So the Product Management Alliance really came to be because of a group of industries that all were opposed to extended producer responsibility.
Yes.
And so we started kind of meeting as an ad hoc group when it came to the attention of a lot of our members that we were kind of all on the same page with our opinions of this type of mandate.
Yes.
We started meeting as on an ad hoc basis, and then eventually it grew. And we decided if we were going to be have any kind of uniformity, we needed to be credible. We needed to have a website. We needed to have an executive director. We needed to have objectives and a strategy and a statement of mission, a mission statement. And so, as a result of the relationships that formed at SGAC, this group was born out of that, and now it's a credible stakeholder group.
So tell people what Kevin does.
We have hired him to be the executive director. He is a contract lobbyist. He works for Main Street Advocates, but he is the face of PMA. So if there's an issue that is affecting all of our industries or even just one, he will write a letter, he will write testimony, he will go and testify in person and represent the industry interests of the group as a whole.
Yep.
But he'll also go, he's gone on my behalf for the carpet industry and written letters or written testimony in opposition to legislation in any of the 50 states. Now, predominantly, our work has been in the Northeast because those have been the states that have really been kind of deep diving into extended producer responsibility.
And Minnesota.
Minnesota has. Yep. Illinois has.
So not just the Northeast.
But
California already has it.
California has it for a lot. Yeah, California has it for a lot. That's not saying that it's a good thing. We're just saying that.
Right.
So he represents us wherever that needs to happen in the country.
Well, what I found helpful when you have those groups, like when Kevin, he in Connecticut, for instance, he had seen something that he had seen. It was popping up in Connecticut. And he said, "Oh, this came up in another state, and here's how it ended up impacting the industry." And so it's helpful to have someone like him who is working in multiple states, because as you know, it's not like the reinventing the wheel. You see it once, you see it again.
And lots of states try and do what other states are doing. There are legislative groups that have things like the Council of State Governments has shared state legislation. What sometimes works in one state, and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, has model legislation, and NCSL works on policy as well. And there are ways to get involved with all of those groups to try and influence and have an impact as well. For example, CRI is members of...
CRI is the Connecticut Rug Institute, for those
carpet,
who don't know.
The carpet and rug.
What did I say?
Connecticut.
Hey, we're changing the name.
We love
We're
Connecticut.
Taking over.
We love
you
Connecticut.
You said you like the Connecticut group.
We do like the Connecticut group.
You don't like it.
Carpet and rug. But we're members of all of those groups. Well, we are not members of ALEC, but we have been in the past, and we do attend their meetings. We are members of NCSL. I find great value in NCSL. They have so many educational opportunities and opportunities to interface with legislators. And in light of full disclosure, I will tell you I was just named to be on the NCSL Foundation Board.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a big honor.
That just became official on Saturday. So it's all new.
Wow.
But the foundation is the portion of NCSL that helps raise the funds that allow the scholarships to be presented to legislators for them to attend. And lots of the programming that NCSL does is because of the foundation's work in raising the private sector, raising money, and being active in interfacing with the legislature. And then CSG has a national component and then four regional components. Components really give you access to legislators in that region. And so if you're having issues, say, in the Midwest, for example, perhaps Illinois.
Just to pick a state.
Or Minnesota. Attending those regional conferences gives you access to meet legislators and hear what policies are trending in the states and possibly have an impact that way.
So CSG, you're going to attend the, there's a meeting later this summer in August in Connecticut.
There is. The CSG East meeting is in Connecticut. And then I will go directly to CSG West, which is in Tacoma.
So you're going to be on the road for several weeks.
I am. I will get home on the 20th of August.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your summers are spent really going to legislative conferences.
Yes. And my winters are spent testifying.
Right. And going to state capitals.
Going to state capitals.
Yeah. And the fewer the better.
Because I do cover all 50 states.
Wow. See, now that is, that's amazing. And last year, how many states had bills that you were tracking?
Oh, how many states had bills that I was tracking? There were carpet-specific bills in three places, one of which was New York City.
Okay.
One of which was New York State, and one of which was Maine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had other states that were considering it.
Well, and I also keep track of states that are doing anything with any kind of recycling legislation.
Yep.
So, and that's a much higher number. It tends to be the Washingtons, the Oregon's, the Californias, the Minnesotas, because there's a Connecticut even. There is the kind of thought process that if they're willing to do EPR on one product, that there could be EPR on another product. I mean, in Maine is the only state that has passed what we call a framework EPR bill, which gives the agency large
discretion.
Yes, discretion is a gentle word, which is surprising. Some states have tried to introduce EPR legislation that's framework that gives all of the discretion to the agency. But in Maine, at least they have to report back to the Environment Committee.
And the Environment Committee has to sign off on it?
Yes. Which was surprising that there was then separate EPR legislation in Maine for both carpet and mattresses. Because as a result of the framework bill, you would think that nobody would be doing anything separate. But they wanted to try something separate, and we are going to start trying to work with the DEP in Maine to work on a pilot project. That'll happen sometime. We're aiming for some meetings in October on that.
Okay. And so you can have either you or, say, Kevin testify when
if it is carpet specific, I will be there.
You will be the one testifying.
I will be there, yeah.
Okay. How was the past year for CRI?
Well, we would say it was a successful year because none of the legislation passed. We think that there are voluntary efforts that can be made, market-driven solutions to the issue, so that we don't need a mandate to tell us.
And so why don't you tell people who aren't familiar what some of these, you take any one of these states who want to mandate EPR, why don't you just explain to the listener who may not be familiar, what does that mean and the impact it would have on your manufacturer?
So it doesn't even really, EPR is pretty much across the board for any product.
Right.
It could be any product. When it comes to carpet, what they're trying to do is put a fee on the front end of the product to help manage the end of life of the product. And in many cases, they want the manufacturer to be responsible for that because they say they don't want the taxpayer to be responsible for it. Well, the taxpayer and the consumer are the same person.
Right.
And that fee, no matter who is responsible for it, is going to be passed on to the consumer.
So they want, when someone goes to buy, say, whatever the product is, to pay some fee, be it a dollar per product or whatever percentage.
Right, like when you buy a car battery.
Okay.
Or tires, there's a fee associated, a dumping fee.
And then there would be an organization set up to collect those fees and then oversee the end of life disposal
of that
product.
And in our product, carpet is not an A to A product. It's not, you know, like bottles are bottles to bottles, or cans are cans to cans, or
yep.
paper is paper to paper. Carpet is an A to A, A to B, A to C. You can turn carpet into carpet. You can turn carpet into carpet cushion. You can turn carpet into artificial hay bales for sediment control. For example, the Florida DOT only specs for their Department of Transportation Geo Hay, which is a product made with post-consumer carpet that they use in sediment control for road construction because it doesn't introduce any new seed matter and it can be washed off and reused. And so economically it may be more expensive at the outset, but it ends up saving the state money. It can be turned into street signs like stop signs and things like that. It can be turned into artificial railroad ties and decking like for your deck outside of the back of your house.
Yep.
So it can be turned into things. Because of the macroeconomics of the current economy with the price of petroleum being so low, it's making the cost of virgin materials more reasonable than the cost of post-consumer products. And so the recycling market as a whole has taken a big hit in the last couple of years, our industry in particular, because you can turn the things into other products, but then you also have to be able to sell those other products. They
right.
have to be procured.
Right.
And it's been a challenge.
Will that change when petroleum pipe prices go back up, if and when they do?
Yes, if they go up.
But we don't know when.
Yeah, but
right.
then it makes everyone else sad because it costs a lot to fill their gas tank.
Right, exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And how does the coming year look, or is it too early to tell?
I haven't even started thinking about it. Although it's definitely that. For example, the New York bill was actually dropped in the assembly after the end of session, but because New York's on the biennium, it'll come back next year.
Okay.
So in New York City, we've been working with the state. Stakeholder group there on New York City had an ordinance regarding carpet and reclamation and recycling, and so we've been working there. Nothing passed. There was a hearing in the sanitation committee. I don't know whether that will come back or not, but we've been working with stakeholders to, because that's the best way to come to a conclusion, is to have a lot of people that we want to recycle, we want to reuse. Some carpet just can't be
right.
repurposed because it gets wet or contaminated and what have you, and then there's nothing you can do with it.
Right.
But I think the best answers are found when people are coming to the table and collaborating.
Yep.
Even if you don't have the same opinion, you can have meaningful dialogue. Right. And you know, try and find the things that you have in common.
Right.
Rather than the things that are putting you on opposite sides of the aisle.
Right. So can we now go back to your involvement with CRI and how you got involved? You have been with CRI for now 15 years?
15 years.
Wow. How did you come to start working at CRI?
Well, I am not your typical lobbyist, I don't think.
I was going to say, because you haven't moved around. I mean, typically there's some movement or some...
People come and go every couple of years, and because really your gift in the trade, if you will, is not your issue expertise. You can learn about any issue.
Yeah.
Your gift is your relationships.
Yeah.
The relationships you have with legislators and your peers. And,
yeah.
But I came to CRI in kind of a roundabout way. I did not major in political science. I did not work on any political campaigns. I did not go to law school. I went to Penn State. I majored in Spanish and Latin American studies. I graduated and I moved to Mexico for 2.5 years and worked in an orphanage. And when I finished at the orphanage, I moved back to D.C. Briefly, I worked interpreting at a doctor's office, which I loved the patients, but I didn't agree with the doctor's practice necessarily. I said, you know, you're going to have a lot of people who don't have insurance, and will you be willing to treat them? And yes, yes, yes. And then that didn't happen. So I then moved on to a trade association. I had no idea what a trade association was. I was hired by the Chemical Manufacturers Association as an assistant, basically a secretary in those days, because they needed someone who spoke Spanish to translate hazardous materials transportation regulations. If you need something to help you fall asleep at night,
I can't.
Try them in English. If you really want to sleep, try them in Spanish.
I'm sure there's not many lobbyists who have done that.
No, probably not.
Maybe none.
So I started at the Chemical Manufacturers Association when it was still CMA,
uh-huh.
And I worked my way up, and I was there 10 years, and the last 4 years, I worked on international advocacy for the Chlorine Chemistry Council.
Okay.
And so, but international is very different than state.
I'm sure it is.
Very different than state. And my boss at the time was recruited to work for the Carpet and Rug Institute, and he said, will you come with me? And I said, you know, I have a daughter in middle school. I need some time to think about it. Why don't you go for a year and see what the opportunities are? And then if there's an opportunity, come back and we'll talk. Well,
yeah.
He then hired the vice president of federal affairs away from the Chlorine Chemistry Council, and he hired a communications person away from there. After a year, he came back. They kept coming back to me and saying, you know, this is what we'd like you to do. We really want you to come work with us. And so after September 11th, when I didn't want to be traveling internationally anymore because I am a parent and wanted to be able to get home to my daughter, I said to them, okay, what is it that you want me to do? And they said, well, we would like you to do our state government relations. And I was like, okay, but I don't know anything about state government relations. I said,
and they said, you're perfect.
I said, you need to hire somebody with like a network and contacts.
Right.
And they said, well, we can't afford them. We can afford you, and we know what you're capable of. And literally the first issue that I had at the state level was in Indiana. And one of my daughter's elementary school, kindergarten friends, was a gentleman who had worked on the Hill. Her dad was a gentleman who had worked on the Hill for Dan Burton from Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And I had become very good friends with his wife. I'm still friends with her today. They had moved back to Indiana. And so I called her and I said, hey, what does your husband know about, you know, this guy and this bill number? And and she said, well, let me see what I can find out. And she got back to me, and I got everything I needed, and I headed out to Indiana.
You're speaking to his wife?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so, because she worked kind of in the political arena as well.
Yeah.
And so she got back to me, and I said to my boss, okay, here's what I know. Da-da-da. He said, I thought you didn't know anybody. I said, well, my daughter's kindergarten friend. And he was like, see, this is why we hired you. But It all goes back to SGAC, because if I hadn't gotten involved with them, I would not have the contacts that I have now.
But so they hired you. This is when they hired you. This is pre anything.
Right, I was just a,
right. And so they hired you, and you started doing this, and you got involved, and used that as kind of a learning.
Yes, found which tools.
But they obviously saw something new. They brought you on with no experience.
None on the state or local.
I mean, the
level,
only experience you had was translating a god-awful document
about
from English to
carrying
Spanish.
Chemicals in Mexico. Yeah, it was awful. It was, oh my gosh, it was so awful. But I love my job, and I remember having a conversation after I'd been there, not even a year. My boss, because I work remotely, I'm the only one that's not in Dalton, Georgia.
So they're based in Dalton, Georgia, and you're in Virginia.
Which is where
most
of the carpet is. Yes.
Yep.
And which is where most of the carpet is made. And so
In Georgia.
Yep. About 85% of all the soft floor covering you walk on in the United States is made within a 60-mile radius of Dalton, Georgia.
Is that
and 97% of everything you walk on in the United States is made in the United States.
That's incredible.
We're very proud of that fact that so much of that manufacturing is made in the USA.
It should be. How many people does the industry employ, say, in Georgia?
Thousands. I mean, thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly don't even have a number. I'm sure I could find it if I needed to, but
okay.
It's a lot. And so my boss called, and he said, I'm just calling to check in, see how it's going. And I said, it's great. I said, I don't have to deal with any of the office politics because I'm up here by myself. I was sharing space with the American fiber manufacturers at the time. Good synergy there. And
you guys get along?
We get along very well.
No,
because our members are, their members are supplying stuff for our members.
But it could be like twins who don't really, they kind of like.
No, these are like, they're fraternal, but they get along
really
well.
I'm looking for friction here.
No, there's no friction. There's no friction, sadly. No drama.
Need drama.
No drama. I don't. Have to be in the office, so I don't deal with any of the office politics. I said, the state of California is a constant source of frustration. I said, but I don't think there's anything you can really do about that.
Yep.
I said, and sometimes my job is so much fun, I'm not sure I'm doing it right. And he said, if your job isn't fun, you're in the wrong job. And, you know, I love my members. I'm proud to work for an industry that's based in the United States.
Employing thousands of people. Yep.
I've had other opportunities, but I'm very happy where I am.
Well, you seem it.
So here I am.
So it's so interesting that, I mean, you started knowing no one, and here we are walking through the convention center in Boston, and literally, how many times have we stopped? I mean, it must have been 10. We're walking like 30 feet. You know, you go to all the conferences. You know just about everyone in the industry, and you're on the foundation, you're involved in different groups. It's really quite amazing how you started. I mean, you're kind of a novice.
I'm a people person, which is like supposed to say on your job interview. I'm a people person.
Given your first task, how you figured out who to go to and how to get the answer is indication.
I'm kind of my own boss because my boss has since retired. We've kind of always followed the mantra that we're not going to put money where we can't have a presence. There are a lot of people that join organizations, any of these legislative organizations, and they give them their money, which the organizations are happy to have.
Yeah.
But they don't have a presence. So we can't always give at the highest level, but we give what we can, and then they get my sweat equity.
So and you engage.
I'm engaged. So, for example, with CSG, I've just been appointed to their environment committee and to their associates advisory committee, the NCSL Foundation, on their board, and I'm a past president of SGAC. So it's just because if we're going to put our money someplace, we're going to have a presence there. And in order to build the relationships that you need to work with legislators, you can't just come in and say, oh, so here I am, I'm from Virginia, and I need your help.
Right.
You need to build a legitimate relationship, not just like a in passing kind of, let me see what I can do to help you, and you can see what you can do to help me.
Right.
It needs to be deeper than that, so that when an issue does arrive, and it's not just building the relationship with legislators, it's building it with your peers, because your peers can help you form those stakeholder groups,
right.
And your peers can help you find contract lobbyists in the state. Every single contract lobbyist that I've hired has been
through peers.
Peers. So,
yeah. Well, Jen, thank you very much. It was great to sit down with you. And good
luck.
I'm
happy to do it.
Good luck in the rest of your time here in Boston. And where do you go from here?
From here, I go for a little lake time with a friend.
Oh, so you go time away, and then your next work trip.
I get 3 days, and then I go to Uncasville, Connecticut for CSG East. And then I will fly directly from CSG East to CSG West in Tacoma.
And then is CSG West your last conference of the summer?
It's my last conference.
Of the summer?
Of August.
Okay.
In September, we're also part of the State Legislative Leaders Foundation.
Okay.
They have a speakers conference for the speakers of the House, and
okay.
they get very good attendance.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Where is that?
That is in Columbus,
okay.
Ohio this year, and also Women in Government is having a meeting in Savannah in September, mid-September. And actually, last night, CRI sponsored the red carpet here at NCSL for a meet and greet for the legislative staff. And so we'll also be sponsoring a red carpet event in WIG.
Great.
So it makes sense for the Carpet and Rug Institute to be sponsoring the red carpet.
Yes, perfect.
And just for the record, the carpet here is going to be reused by the convention center, and the carpet and WIG will be sent back to the manufacturer who's donating it for the event.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we will say goodbye. Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you for having me.